Aloha!
Hello and welcome. We're back from the BallerLifestyle.com. It's the Baller Lifestyle Podcast, episode number 429. I was gonna, we're talking this week about Bull Durham with our dear friend Jason Stewart. And I was going to record, so we recorded a couple days early, and I was going to record an intro where I just talked about a couple stories, maybe read a couple email before we got into Bull Durham, just to kind of fill it out, make it feel like a little more fresh, make it feel like it's from that day. And now it is that day. It currently is that day. But in between the recording of the Bull Durham podcast and today, which is that day, I got COVID-19. So I'm laid up. I'm like sweating in bed. And I just got up to just record this little intro. And you can hear that's a full show next week. But until then, please enjoy the Baller Lifestyle Podcast review of the 1988 classic minor league baseball film, Bull Durham. I am joined now by co-host of the show. You hear him here every week, Mr. Ed Daly. Ed, what's up?
It is very hot, and I am sweltering right now. I went for a bike ride. It was like 94 and humid.
And humid. You get the humidity. Yeah, it's hot here too. I got the air blasting, and we're recording on a Saturday, which we don't normally do, Saturday afternoon. So I'm going to crack my first beer of the day.
There you go.
There we go. We're also joined by somebody I imagine spent some time in the heat today as well, because where he lives, almost to Ventura County, so far north, is very hot. It's very hot there, and he loves to hike. He hikes all the time. I see him on his Instagram, always hiking. Of course, it's our dear, 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 dear friend, Jason Stewart. Jason, what's up?
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, buddy.
Hello there. Hello there.
You doing it? Signature sign on? Did you go for a hike today, buddy?
No. Had to take a detour. We're going to do it early tomorrow and then hit the Dodger game for the holiday weekend.
Oh, awesome.
Yes. Michelle's got a friend who is married to a guy who works for the Mets, and I got to sit in like the prime seats right behind the dugout this past week.
That's nice.
And the one thing I was thinking is how baseball players are all like fucking units now. And when we were kids, like half of them look like somebody's stepdad.
Oh, dude, you watch.
They are all like just muscle on top of muscle.
Yeah. There's the guys we grew up watching play, like the even the better players could not crack the JV these days. Like it's night and day.
Yeah. Like just seeing them up close, they're all enormous, and like they're just all muscle.
They used to think that your shortstop needed to be a wiry little, like a Davey Concepcion or Omar Vizquel.
Diminutive guy.
Yeah. But now they realize it doesn't matter how well they field. We need guys that can hit 40 home runs at every position.
Yeah. Cal Ripken was the first big dude who played shortstop.
Yep. And then we had that whole crew of Garcia Parra, Derek Jeter, Alex Rodriguez came in. The Pirates shortstop is 6'7".
It's crazy. These guys are enormous.
Jay Stu, are they playing baseball the right way these days?
Nah, I've got a lot of issues with baseball. We could just do a separate. Maybe we could save it for the Red Circle, a separate podcast for
playing it the wrong way.
Yeah, but I do have a question. Ed dropped the name Michelle. Are you talking about Michelle Pfeiffer or Obama?
Oh, Obama. Now Obama.
You know his wife's called Michelle. Jason.
See, but the game is I throw two out there. He's supposed to throw a third one in there.
Right. Oh, and just back and forth like that. Perfect.
Yeah, that's the one.
It's Michelle Rodriguez, that tough talking broad in every movie.
Yeah, she's awesome. Okay, so we're discussing Bull Durham, a classic 1988. I mean, it was a big hit, right?
It was huge.
Yeah, minor league baseball. Basically, it's a story of a soon to wash out career minor leaguer and an up and coming flamethrower. And he's like some kind of bonus baby, but he's playing on an independent league shit team for some reason.
Yeah, I was wondering if back then it was more the Wild West, like where there were just a bunch of independent leagues, because I'm pretty sure the Durham Bulls now are like the Rays affiliate or whatever it is. Yeah. Like, I think everyone is assigned to something, but maybe back then it was different.
No, I think they call it an A-ball team.
Yeah.
Remember, Crash says, what am I doing in A-ball?
Right.
And I think it's the A-ball affiliate of the Yankees. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. They definitely allude, and he gets called up. So it's not like they bought his contract. So yeah, they're affiliated, the Durham Bulls. Bull Durham, 1988 romantic comedy. Oh, and the big premise of the movie, right, is that there's an older woman in town, in the town of Durham, and every year when the season starts, she picks a player and she's going to fuck him all season, and then he's going to get good at baseball. Yes, exactly. And the big premise of the movie is that, or not the premise of the movie, but hold on, I'm trying to type around my mic here. Is that what's her name? Susan Sarandon's character. I've already forgot. Annie Savoy. She's like this old bag that picks up, like, she's hot. She's like a randy older lady, and she picks a young player to bang, and and then he gets good at baseball. How old do we think that Susan Sarandon was when they shot this movie?
Oh, so I looked it up, so I know.
Yeah, so did I.
But she looks good. I mean, they kind of reference her as some like old bag.
Right.
Is she 41?
Yeah, she was like early 40s, 40, 41, 42, somewhere in there.
She looks great. And
she looks fantastic.
I can make an argument that for the next, 15 to 20 years,
she got better.
Still looks great.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. She pulled a Mary Steenburgen.
No, she's 70 years old right now. She looks fantastic.
Yeah.
I read earlier today, I just like clicked on a link about Bull Durham, and she had to dress super hot for like meeting with a studio executive because like, there's no way they'll consider me because I'm 41. So I have to show them that I can look hot or something. Like
insane.
That.
Yeah.
I took that as code for I had sex with the creators of the movie. it was the late 80s.
Right. They did that.
Yeah.
They did that back then. Absolutely. I noticed that. So the casting of this movie, Robert Wall is the pitching coach.
Yep.
For the Durham Bulls. And I just wondered, are there any links? Could we do a 6 degrees of Jason Stewart with Robert Wool?
There must be an Arliss connection.
Yeah, there's gotta be Arliss. So Arliss, that's one of those shows that he played an agent. It's like the original Entourage or the original Ballers. He's an agent, and he's got wacky.
I can do this.
Yeah. Oh, okay. He's got wacky clients. And it's like pretty much unfunny and uninteresting, the show, but you're just waiting to see if like Dave Winfield shows up. Like that's the whole point of the show.
I think I watched 80% of them and I didn't like the show.
No, it was unfunny. He had, what's her name was his assistant, Sandra Oh, who went on to do in everything. And then he had some other, Kirby was his his man Friday, and it was completely unfunny. There was no jokes in the show. It was, you're just waiting to see if somebody, an athlete you liked, would show up at some point. It was basically just like Ballers.
It was like one of HBO's first originals. Like it kind of was, it was almost a trailblazer in like a pay TV made by HBO show. And I stumbled across it in the last 10 years and it does not age well. Like some of those shows like Oz, Sopranos, like you could watch them and they're timeless.
Yep.
This was very dated. Like if you're not in 1995, you lose kind of touch with ours.
Right. And and the jokes weren't funny in 1995. So Ed, give us your 6 degrees of Stuart Jason.
So what I can remember on Arliss, the black dude, Michael Boatman, was also part of the Spin City universe.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I remember this guy.
I believe Lou Diamond Phillips had a cameo as like his boyfriend on an episode of Spin City.
Wow.
And really?
That's 2 degrees. That's 2 degrees. Wow. Amazing. Well, I didn't know if we'd be able to do it. I was just taking a guess. Fantastic. Ed.
I believe
insane knowledge.
Lou Diamond was on an episode of Spin City.
LDP, close friend of Jason Stewart.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm going to play the
I would say I guessed that it would be a Jamie Lynn Sigler, Robert Wall, just kind of HBO casting a lot of their same actors. There has to be some kind of synergy there. If it isn't Jamie Lynn and Robert Wall in the same HBO project.
Yeah. I mean, we could probably get it down to 1 degree at some point because Robert Wall has he's one of those guys where I'm like, oh, whatever happened to him? And then I just went on his IMDb and he's been in something every year. He's like always in things.
Total a-hole as a talk show host, by the way. I heard nothing but horrible things about his radio show.
Oh, he had a radio show? Sports talk?
Yeah, they gave him a radio show. I don't know if it was a sports talk or kind of like just kind of entertainment, but I guess he was the ultimate dick and didn't get any traction, but acted like, I guess, like Arliss the entire time.
Yeah, he had this movie, and then he was in Batman with Michael Keaton. Then he probably got Arliss shortly thereafter.
Yep.
Cobb.
And then, Ty Cobb. And then, maybe people, I mean, he might still work, but, you don't see him.
You don't, no. He's on things.
But I just looked it up. Spin City, the episode was called An Officer and a Gentleman, Lou Diamond Phillips.
LDP.
There you go.
Amazing.
That's great. That's
really
awesome.
Just a great, stunning skill you have there, Ed. Okay, let's play the trailer and we can talk a little bit more about Bull Durham.
Do you believe in that?
Well, I believe in the small of a woman's back. The hanging curveball, high fiber, good Scott.
Well, who believes in the hanging curveball?
That's a weird thing to say. He believes in taking advantage of it?
Right, exactly. It's not really something to believe in. It's something you hope that happens.
Let's get to that speech because there are a couple of things that really need analysis.
Okay. And I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last for 3 days. After 12 years in the minor leagues, I don't try out. Besides, I don't believe in quantum physics when it comes to matters of the heart.
Sometimes alone. It's just a song. Anyway, that kind of sets it up. What are the other issues you have with that speech, Ed?
So, I wrote it down. He talks about, the thing he talked about, wet kisses that last 3 days.
Yeah.
No. After a certain amount of kissing, we're going to get to it.
Yeah, it's time to kiss my dick. Like you're the kissing is to set up the shit you want
to
do.
It's means to an end.
Exactly. Right. It's not the end.
And they cut from the trailer, but he said, "I believe in softcore pornography."
Oh, yeah. Is he my buddy Brad? Nobody believes
in softcore. What? No. You're either watching it or you're not.
Get him out.
No dude believes in that.
No.
I think women prefer the softcore. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I understand your issue with the hanging curve. I assume it meant I believe in taking advantage of, something like that, taking advantage of a hanging curve. For the most part, it was kind of fun opening presents on Christmas morning versus Christmas Eve. Like those are all fun. But then I believe in softcore pornography and wet kisses the last 3 days. It was like, this is a crazy person.
No. Yeah.
I think a couple things kind of played out since 88. And I need to go full disclosure here that Bull Durham is like a top 10 movie of mine. I played baseball. It's my passion, my love. I think this movie does the best job of portraying baseball, the language, the dialogue.
Yeah.
But you know, we'll get to some specifics. But I will say this. A couple things played out over the next, 35 years. The elimination of the DH is what he believes in. And it went in the exact opposite way, which I'm with Crash, by the way. If you were going to make a universal anything, no DH.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I am an AL guy in that, like, I cheer for the Orioles, but I always thought the pitchers hitting was a cool aspect because if the pitcher's having a good game, but you need a hit, there was like an extra level of skill needed
that you and had to figure switch. Out. And the double switch. Yeah.
Yeah.
And my question to the people that love the DH, is the fucking pitcher a player on the field or not?
Right.
He's playing on the field. He needs to bat his position. That's there. Why not have 9 DHs? Have a DH for every fucking position.
Annoyed by the praise that Edgar Martinez used to get, and they'd be like, "Oh, he's the best," and he would never play. And they're like, "Well, he hurt his back like 15 years ago, so he can't play."
Dave Ortiz just got into the Hall of Fame as a DH. But like I've always thought, what's weird about this, and I just talked about this on the talk show that I work on this week. It's when people say that the universal DH like kind of is consistent with the pace of the game concern that the commissioner has. I would argue against that. The pace of the game, you know, the double switches and stuff, that's one thing. But you're adding offense to each game. I think American League. Games were like an average of 30 minutes longer or something.
Yeah, they were always longer.
So it's like, it doesn't make any sense. We want to shorten up the game and make it more appealing for the young people, but then we're going to throw more offense into the game. So that's a contradiction. And then, by the way, him saying that strikeouts are fascist, I've always agreed with that. It's selfish. It raises your pitch counts. It makes sure that you don't go as long into games. And that's played itself out. Strikeouts are the thing now, and pitchers go six innings.
Except, I've
got a pitch count discussion to have.
Except,
when they talk about Nuke's first game.
He tells Nuke Lelouch, who supposedly throws 100 miles an hour, to try to get ground balls. Like he's supposedly a flamethrower. He's built to strike people out. That's what he's there to do. Like that's his game. He's not going to all of a sudden become Greg Maddux up there and throw sinkers that get grounded to second base.
I think we do need to talk about how bad the entertainment value was of Max Patkin, the clown prince of baseball. I'm just putting it on in the background. It's on Amazon Prime, by the way, if you want to watch.
I would say that 5 minutes into the movie or 8 minutes into the movie, I had to write this down. You know, they're showing Max do his thing. And I remember back then that Max was a thing in the minor leagues. He would go from ballpark to ballpark. And he would do these things to entertain kids. And I guess it was cheap. And Christina, my girlfriend, looks at me and says, "I don't get this guy."
Right.
No, nobody should. He's bad for baseball. He's terrible.
Like, he like dances and makes
and he
faces.
Spits.
Yeah.
And he spits like he fills his mouth with water and spits it out.
And what? I remember when this movie came out, Max Patkin shows up and I was like, "Oh yeah, that guy." Like, why should I know?
I shouldn't know him. With his ugly he's, teeth.
He's so unfunny. And look, if you're going to throw a mascot in the movie to give it a real baseball feel, you got to go out and get my guy Ted Gianulis, the San Diego Chicken.
San Diego Chicken.
Yes.
See, but that's the difference. I made that distinction because Christina was like, "Wait a minute, they already have a bull. Why did they have Mac?" No. The mascot, the bull, stayed with the team.
Right.
The Max is a traveling guy. Yeah.
He was like Morgana, the kissing bandit.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, you had to get him a bus ticket. you had to get him a room at the Holiday Inn. And you had
probably
to pay
had
him.
To pick up his tab.
Yeah, you had to get his expenses, his meals. Well,
the one thing you didn't have to do was wash his clothes, because his clothes didn't look washed.
Yeah.
It looks like he just slept in them and went to the next ballpark.
He looks disgusting.
No, what is it? Like, he's a lot of teams have a guy that's just like a fan that like makes something. Like he's
like so the guy who makes the signs.
Yeah, like the Lakers. In the 80s, they used to have Dance and Barry. You remember Dance and Barry, Jason?
I think cocaine probably remembers Dance and Barry.
You don't remember Dance and Barry?
What was his thing? Like, what did he do?
He would like dance up and down he would wear like a lame jacket, like a gold lame jacket. And he would just like dance around in the stands between timeouts or during timeouts. Okay. Dance and Barry. The Cubs have Ronnie Woo Woo. I think he might have died. But he's just like a guy that is just like goes to every game. Max Patkin he's employed. He's paid to be there, but he's like
he's
not doing anything.
He's not even a fan of a team. He just goes around.
What a piece
annoying people.
And do real teams have mascots?
I think a lot of minor league teams do. Minor league is fun because they got to drum up interest.
They have dollar beer night, all that stuff. It's one thing I noticed. Is that Nuke wants to give himself a nickname. And he's like, all the great ones have nicknames, like Oil Can. So I assume he's talking about Dennis Oil Can Boyd, who
I love that nickname.
It's a great nickname.
It's great.
So that contradicts the thing I just said five minutes ago, which is most of this movie isn't dated. I will say Oil Can Boyd, if in 1988 he was very relevant. That did not age well.
Oil Can Boyd's best season, 1986. He went 16. He went 16-10. He started 30 games.
But I think he got smoked in like game 6 or 7.
His ERA was 3.78 that season, which is pretty middle of the road.
I want to say there was a drug charge in there.
He had a cocaine problem. He had a fat dick, obviously, because that's his nickname is Oil Can. And that's what we've learned as we've aged is that everybody's nickname was about their dick. The Big Hurt, the Big Unit, fucking Oil Can, the Cobra.
Tug McGraw.
Yeah, Tug McGraw liked to jerk off a lot. Career, Dennis Oil Can Boyd, he's a 500 pitcher, 78-77, almost exactly 500. Career ERA over 4. Not a great one. Just an okay one.
It's a career. It's a great career.
It's a great career. He played 10 years in the major leagues.
Not career. Not great, but it is a career. Like, that's an admirable career. Any pitch in a World Series against one of the best teams ever.
And the other one, he gets a pass on the other one because he said Catfish Hunter, who I think is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Catfish is another good name, though.
But it's a great name. But all the great ones have nicknames. What's Sandy Koufax's nickname? What's Bob Gibson? Like, not, they don't have nicknames. That's just like some guys have nicknames. Is
that's a good point.
You know, not
but
everybody has
his name is Ebby Calvin. Like it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I think they gave him a clunky name.
I think that if they wanted to be, if they would have known what would have played out over the next 20 years, they probably would have changed Oil Can to the Rocket.
Yeah, Rocket. Yeah, he was still a little early.
That stood up.
Career, but I wish we had more nicknames, because now so many nicknames are just initials, like Kevin Durant. Oh, it's KD. What is that? That's not a nickname.
Yeah.
I would say that hockey is probably the worst, because I think the dumbest humans on earth play hockey, but baseball is close.
Yeah.
And most of the time, they just add an EY, the shortened version of their last name or first name.
Saxy. I know Sucky's Deke Saxy. Yeah. But they're pretty lame.
He asked for the nickname right after you see Nuke LaLoosh wearing out old Millie.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, so we talked about Annie Savoy, who picks a player for the season, and Millie is like the upstart who picks many players during the season.
And the manager comes in and he's like, "What? Hey, don't waste your energy on some piece of ass," which is quite possibly the greatest terminology ever. Like, I use piece of ass all the time. It's not. It's such a high compliment to a woman to be called a piece of ass.
It's a good one. And also, I think it's time to talk about the greatness of Trey Wilson.
Yes.
As the skipper.
Yes. He's great.
I only know him from this and Nathan Arizona. Right. And then he died right after this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rest in peace, man. Rest in peace.
He was great, but also he died at the age of
40.
40?
Cerebral hemorrhage.
No way was he 40. He looked 58.
Yeah, he was. He looked like he was rounding third, heading to his 60s.
Yeah, he's the reverse Susan Sarandon.
Yeah, I mean, as Nathan Arizona, you know, he had those babies, but you assumed this was like a second marriage situation. Like he was an older dad.
Unpainted Arizona. Yeah, he looks very old. But he was 40, and sadly he died. But he was fantastic in this movie.
Like, he really was.
Yeah, he's good at everything.
He was so good.
He was just like the 80s. We, you know, the last movie we did together was Fatal Attraction. Like, everybody smoked all the time. Imagine having a manager who was a chain smoker on buses and like, dugouts and offices.
Yeah, like Jim Leland was never as old as he looked in the dugout.
Oh yeah.
Sparky Anderson.
Yes. Oh, Sparky Anderson looked 70 at 39 years old.
Yeah, like for the Reds.
Yeah. And I think his character, the manager, I don't know if we could say he's a great manager. I think there's a reason he's an A-ball because after Nuke's first
let's talk about Nuke's first appearance.
Exactly.
Oh, so he walked 18, new league record.
Yes.
Also struck out 18. Yep. Also new league record. If he walked on four pitches and struck out everybody on three pitches, he's at 126 pitches through six innings.
Wow.
Yeah.
If he had a no hitter and everything was a perfect strike or a perfect ball, that's 126 pitchers. He's a minor league manager. Yeah. You're supposed to protect the talent. That's insane.
That's a really great point.
That was what I was thinking. Like it's one thing to walk 18 guys.
Yeah.
It's another thing for a pitching coach or manager to allow you to be in a game long enough to walk 18 guys. And then him striking out 18 means that he went at least six innings.
Yeah. So he pitched into
the seventh inning with 18 walks.
Yeah. He walked the bases loaded and struck out the side in every inning.
But I will say that Ron Shelton, who wrote the movie, was a minor leaguer, but it was for the Orioles, and seeing how they treated
Ben McDonald,
it kind of tracks that they let him go with a heavy pitch count.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Like Dusty Baker thinks he's just getting warmed up with 126 pitches after six innings.
Yeah. But who's the next pitcher I can ruin?
Yeah.
I would love to know the percentage of the people listening to this podcast right now who actually know that Ben McDonald reference. I would love to know that.
It's the first overall draft pick.
That is a deep poll.
Sorry. I'm an Orioles fan. I got very little. This is the stuff I have.
Yeah.
The thing is that obviously he throws 100 miles an hour. That's the thing, right? We just have to kind of address the elephant in the room, which is Nuke LaRusha's athleticism. It's been acknowledged by Shelton. It's been acknowledged by everybody.
Yes.
They hired him for his acting and not his athleticism. Anyone who's ever played baseball or watched enough of it knows that nobody who winds up like that or pitches like that would ever come close to a professional pitcher.
It's
a caricature. It's kind of... It's ridiculous.
It's offensive.
There's so much movement in that windup. The hand goes behind his back. Yeah. It's very weird.
He looks like, if you're watching the movie, 6 minutes, 30 seconds into the movie, we see Nuke LaRusha throw a pitch. He looks like he's trying to imitate the throwing motion of a pitcher from the 1800s.
With the high leg kick. Guys. Yeah. Yeah.
And somehow he's able to throw 100 miles an hour, but he basically like puts it like a shot put, like it weighs 80 pounds. It comes out of his shoulder rather than up high. I don't know how they couldn't just, and somehow he's also throwing off his back foot. You have to watch him do it. It's ridiculous.
He throws like a theater kid.
Yes, yes. But, he throws like he doesn't know how to throw.
But and I will say he's fucking fantastic as a meathead jock because
yeah. He's amazing.
Because sports from high school up are filled with meatheads. Like just really dumb steakheads, and he nails it.
It's really weird because it's almost like it's an underrated role in this. You know, Costner was on the way up, his trajectory was, and this was part of his stardom. Sarandon had been there, and I think she got nominated for a Golden Globe or something. But like Tim Robbins, when he's not pitching, steals every single scene he's in.
Because like Costner gets the speeches and stuff, and he's the wise one. But like Robbins has to sell it that he's a steakhead, and he's awesome. Right.
No, he's incredible. He's really good. Yeah.
And we did Major League, and like Major League, the actors were awful baseball players for the most part. Charlie Sheen looked like he knew what he was doing, but you just kind of you almost forgave that movie because it was a comedy and it was over the top and ridiculous. Right. Ron Shelton was a minor leaguer. He wrote this movie, created this movie. I know he wanted to go for authentic, and Nuke was the one thing that was over the top. The rest of the guys could play a little baseball. He was the one guy that you're like, there's no fucking way he plays. But to his credit, like, again, amazing performance by Robbins.
And other than when he pitches.
Then not so amazing.
Yes.
The million-dollar arm with the five-cent head.
Yeah, exactly. They say that a lot. Also, Crash shows up, right? And his contract has been purchased so he could, you know, he's a wily old veteran.
He goes, I'm the player to be named later.
Right,
which is a good line.
Yeah, that is
great line. And that was the name of the script. Did you read that?
Oh,
the
no,
name of the script was A Player to be Named Later, which is a cool name. I kind of almost wish it was that. Yeah. Between the three of us, we're all heterosexual, you know, have significant others. But how gorgeous is Costner?
Oh, he's gorgeous.
The man is handsome.
Beautiful. So
distractingly attractive.
Yeah. So just last year, like I haven't watched it, but Michelle Obama watches Yellowstone, and I was like, does Costner still look good? And she like swooned. She's like, oh yeah, he's beautiful.
He got the plugs. Like he's keeping, you know, he's very tan.
Right. He's just super handsome.
No, he's so good looking. So Annie's decided she's going to be, Nuke is the guy she's going to be sexing this season, but these guys kind of start a rivalry for her affections. And then at one point she's like, you guys want to go, let's go to my place. And they're like, which one of us? And she's like,
both
of you, of course. So you're thinking, oh, she's looking to get spit roasted.
Yeah. She wants the spit roast.
Yeah. Yeah. She wants a little DP sesh, but they go to her house crashes.
Costner in that moment, I thought was an interesting choice of writing. Maybe he did this on his own, but as soon as she said both of you, like he was the giddy one. Like
he raised the eyebrow.
He saw that as well. He saw the threesome. He's like, this will be fun. Let's go do this. Like it was a rare kind of act of immaturity in this movie. Like, he was the mature one, but he was the one most giddy to get into the threesome. But before that, the fight outside and the way that Nuke fucking acts and like he's so fucking great as the fucking jock who wants to kick this old man's ass.
No, it's great. It's
fantastic.
Then they're at her house and then Nuke's like, nah, he's like, I don't do sloppy seconds. He's like, he's like, look, I'm Costner. I don't compete for puss. Puss competes for me. Like I'm not doing this
ever.
Yeah. So he bounces, he does his speech, whatever. And then she takes Tim Robbins in the bedroom. He said, is somebody going to go to bed with somebody or what? She takes him into the bedroom.
This would have pissed off Caleb, this part.
Big time. It's the first thing I thought. She takes him into the bedroom. She ties him to the bed and he's like, oh, I've heard of this. He's like, he's into it. You know, it's like a different kind of thing. And then she ties him there and then she reads him poetry. Walt Whitman. Poetry. She busts out a little Leaves of Grass.
He's laying there in his striped grippers, and she's reading him Leaves of Grass.
Yeah. He's like, am I getting laid tonight or what? And she's like, no, this is what we're doing.
Yeah. And then once again, he's like, are we going to fuck or what? She just keeps it going.
Yeah, exactly.
We have to go over the speech, the famous speech by Costner that happened before that. Him saying, I've been in the minors for a long time. I'm not trying out. I don't try out. That's a good line.
Yeah.
But so your main issue with the speech, Ed, was the softcore porn and something else.
The sloppy kisses that take 3 days.
3 days.
I think he goes out on a political limb, too. And he thinks that Lee Harvey acted alone. Oh,
I'm with him there.
But then, not long after that, he's Jim, what's his name, in JFK.
That's right. I like that. Uh-huh. I never even thought of that.
Back and to the left. Back and to the left. Back and to the left.
I've never once even heard that connection made. He played a character that was trying to prove the exact opposite.
Yeah. Probably 3 years later.
His mind was changed.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy. What else happens? We're introduced to, and every team's got one of these guys, the Bible thumper. The Jesus guy that's trying to convert everybody. How about we pray on it?
He's a real drag.
Look, I mean, nobody's, you know, have your thing, but, you know, don't bum the other guys out constantly with your whole gig. You know, there's always that guy on the team. I once heard a story, and Jason probably knows this story, but I'll tell it in a, I'll euphemize, won't use any names. There was a very famous actress, was well-known, household name, that used to love to have sex with a obscure Major League Baseball player. I'll say that.
Okay.
And she would like meet him on the road to just a bone. They just had a thing.
Like a Madonna situation.
Kind of, yeah, like a Madonna, Dennis Rodman, Scottie Pippen thing. And one time she's like, hey, why don't... see if your friend wants to join us. But the friend loved the Lord, so he couldn't participate, but he just hung out in the corner and jerked off.
Oh.
Because of his faith. His faith
like wouldn't Craigslist allow him. Threesome guy.
Yes, exactly. Yes. His faith wouldn't allow him. So, you know, that happens. There's always that guy on the team. But he is able to, later in the movie, tame the piece of ass.
Millie.
So that's a huge win for him. He must be packing.
So I noticed when they were going through the players, one of the guys is Dennis Hopper's son from Hoosiers. This is the guy that's trying to get in on the Jobu stuff when he's blessing the bat. Yeah. That's Dennis Hopper's son from Hoosiers. And then he's the one who gets cut, or he's like, this is the hardest job a manager has.
Right. Well, that's kind of weird though, because it's like it's A-ball. Like you're cutting guys every day. Guys are coming in like it can't be that hard. You do it all the time. And you gotta expect to be cut. You know, you're in the low minors. So you're just trying to hang on. Eventually you're gonna get cut. Speaking of the guys on the team, people that aren't familiar should Google right now the name Danny Gans.
Yeah, he was a Vegas guy, right?
Entertainer of the year every year.
Yeah, I looked him up. I was like, what? Because I on Amazon, you know, you can see like the people pop up. And I was like, Danny Gans, the Vegas guy? I didn't realize he died like 20 years ago.
Yes, and I believe this might have been, this is one of the great emails ever read on a show Jason used to work on. Maybe the last time our close friend Travis Rogers was ever featured on that show, because an email came in the day Danny Gans died, and Jim refused to read it. So he had Travis read it on the air. And it went something like, for my next impression, I'll be doing B. Arthur, signed Danny Gans, because B. Arthur had died like the day before. You remember that, Jason?
Vaguely.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It happened.
I guess Danny Gans was an actual minor league ball player.
Yeah, he was a ball player. I think he was in the Dodgers organization. Now I got to Google him. Entertainer of the year. And I think you can just call yourself that. I don't think that there's any real 2009
There isn't a contest for Entertainer of the Year. It's just whoever puts it on the billboard.
Right, exactly. He was Entertainer of the Year every year, and I think he the opiates got him.
So I looked it up. I think he was on Delauded, but it, you know, at least the spin they put on it was he just had another condition didn't jive with Delauded.
Yeah, he was making $100 million a year at the time after washing out as a major leaguer and an actor. He became Entertainer of the Year in Las Vegas. So it's
Shit! Wow,
nice to see.
I had no idea all these years that guy was guy.
Danny Gans.
Yeah, I had no idea. Crazy.
So I don't know at what point this happens, but when Crash is first like batting, and I think he strikes out the first at bat, you see him, and Annie passes a note to like one boy to another.
Yeah.
And she says, "You're pulling your hips." And he says, he writes back, and then she goes, "Oh my." And Millie reads, and it says, "I want to make love to you." They must have like edited it, because I paused it. He wrote on the piece of paper, "Let's fuck." Which is so much better.
Yes, of course.
Like, you're pulling your hips and you need to do this for your swing. Yeah. And he just writes back, "Let's fuck," and hands it to the bat boy. And, then she goes, "I want to make love to you." It definitely says, "Let's fuck."
That's great.
So much better. That's great detail.
I thought they gave Robert Wool a very underrated line, and if you could, you could easily miss it. And so as soon as he hands the bat boy the note, Robert Wool says, "Yeah, if anybody knows about pulling their hips out too soon, it's Annie."
That's great. And they take a shot at the natural when the bat boy's like, "Hey, get a hit, Crash," and he's like, "Shut up."
I thought that was one of the best writing choices of the movie. It really was. It was the anti-natural.
Yeah.
I haven't even thought about that, but like the thing to do in that moment was just to be a pro and tap the kid on the helmet and say, "I'll try my best."
Thanks,
or whatever.
Buddy.
Yeah. Him saying "shut up" in that moment, I think, is the perfect, one of the perfect examples of what makes this thing different. Like, baseball players are not like romantic, and they're very much like Crash in that moment. The only thing he gives a shit about right now is getting this girl out of his head so that he could finish his at bat. That's the only thing he's thinking about.
It's a team sport. It's a team sport, but it's like, it is very individual.
You against the other guy.
Yeah, you're thinking about yourself and the battle against the pitcher. Nothing else.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is a very well-known scene in the movie when Crash is talking to Nuke about the condition of his shower shoes.
Right.
Oh, amazing.
Because it came up on our show recently, right?
Did it?
I think you referenced it a couple weeks ago.
He's like, "There's fungus on your flip-flops." I think he means mildew. I don't know. The point is, why is he holding it? It's in his it's in his hand. Can't you just point to the ground and go, "Hey, look at this. You're disgusting. Yeah, get some new, go to
true.
Kmart and get some new ones."
It.
Why? He's holding it up.
I was thinking, did he bring those shoes with him? Because, like, if he just got to the team, how could it get that bad that fast? He'd been there for one start.
Good point. Good. That's a good point. Yeah, maybe he's had them, you know, in high school or the other minor league teams or wherever. You know, he brings them with him. Disgusting.
It's one of those scenes and one of those lines that has permeated. Like, it's still used to this day. Like, I still think about it. Whenever you see an athlete like do something that's eccentric, like Kyrie Irving, even, or I think about Brian Wilson, the former Dodgers closer, Giant closer, who just looked fucking ridiculous.
He dyed his beard. Yeah,
it's like when you're saving 50 games a year, you're eccentric and odd, but you know, colorful. But when you're getting your ass kicked every night, like you were on the Dodgers, you're that fucking old guy with a horrible beard who looks. Yeah. So it's like, to me, that scene or that exchange has permeated for 30 years. Like it's a completely timeless, I guess, idea is what I'm saying.
Yeah. That's a good point. I remember Eric Gagne, he never washed his hat.
So, yeah, it but had he the would, sweat marks.
It, yeah, it was. And by the end of the season, it was all salty. But the fucking guy saved like 84 games in a row. Like he was automatic, just flame throwing guys every time he came out. So you're like, that's fucking badass. Like he looks cool. Now the Dodgers have Craig Kimbrel, who's okay, but he's got a little fucking tiny ponytail. and when he sets up, when he's reading the signs,
he's stupid.
He hangs his fucking arm out.
It's stupid.
It is so dumb. Like it's so irritating.
Well, when he was on the Braves, remember when like there was that video of like everybody in the behind the backstop was imitating it and making fun of him? It was pretty funny.
See that.
Oh, it's a good video.
It should be made fun of. It's stupid.
Yes. It's like there's a reason why we've never once seen it. I think he says he does it to remind himself to keep his shoulder. I don't know what the fuck it is, but like it's stupid. And if you have like a 5.5 ERA with the Dodgers like this year,
yes.
It looks even more ridiculous.
Yes.
Stop fucking doing that because nobody needs to do that.
Yes.
So the whole thing around that scene and then, Crash strikes out or whatever, but we find out through Annie or whatever that this guy's got 227 home runs in the minor league. So –
yes.
Ed, I don't know, Ed, if you've done your math on this one. On the 18 walks. But like, how many seasons has he played? What did he have to average? And
so
like,
I didn't realize because one of you just said that he had played 12 years. I think
is that it?
Well, they said years.
They said 12. I think it was during the trailer. Maybe they said 12 years.
Yeah, because in the movie, I remember them saying he played a decade in the minor leagues. So the guy was hitting nearly 25 home runs as a catcher every single year in the minor leagues. I think he would have gotten more than a 21-day look at the big leagues.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's too many home runs for 12 years.
In the 80s, a catcher with power? That's almost unheard of.
A power hitter was like 25 home runs was a big-time power hitter.
And no catchers were doing that.
In the 80s, especially.
In the 80s, not till Piazza came along.
Maybe Matty Noakes 1 year.
A switch hitting power guy. That's Mickey a lot of Pendleton. Fucking home runs.
Yeah. No, you'd give him a look. If you got a catcher that shows power in the minor leagues and consistently, he's hitting 25 home runs every single year, no matter what league he's in, you're going to give him a look at the big leagues.
He must, jerk to people.
Yeah, could be.
By the way, every time they play a game at night, and I'm guessing they shot all the night games in 1 8-hour session, you could see the cold in their breath, right? So I think they shot it in like 30 degree spring weather or whatever, and then they made sure to make everyone kind of looks sweaty and whatnot. If you watch it back, like
the garter scene,
every time they talk at night, outside they're
freezing,
you can see their breath, which is But then they're dripping with sweat. So they kind of made sure to probably wetten themselves when they were doing these scenes.
Right, because baseball's a summer game, they must have shot it in the fall or winter because that's when, the fields were available.
And I think that the first night game they played, maybe it was Crash's first time with Nuke, right? So he shakes him off.
Yeah.
And then Crash tells the batter – what's coming.
Yeah, he Astros him.
Like Nuke's lines, like I said, whenever he's not pitching, he steals scenes with lines like this. He said, why? Costner goes to the mound. Crash goes to the mound. He's like, why are you calling me off? And, they have a little, I want to announce my presence with authority and all this stuff. So then, so Costner goes back to catching and he tells the guy what's coming, but then it goes to Nuke and he says, why is he always calling me meat, man? I'm the one driving the Porsche. It's fucking lines like that. To just sum up Nuke, dude, he says shit like in that vein, the entire movie. And it's every time, I've seen this movie, 100 times, even more. Right. And it's one of my favorite movies. I find myself laughing out loud at the movie. My girlfriend at some point was like, what's wrong with you? Like, it's like, I still find these lines like very funny. Nuke is fucking great at that.
The one line that I laughed out loud for this was not even like one of the better lines, but when he, towards the end, when he's finally like telling him what to do and he's listening, when he just goes, throw the next one at the mascot. Yeah. Cause he had thrown like 8 straight strikes and he's like, just hit the mascot. You'll fuck this guy up.
Yeah. they do get, despite this, you know, them getting a lot of things right about baseball, they do, and maybe this is me nitpicking here, but they do get some things wrong. Like the Bible thumper's in a slump and he wants the Latin player to bless his bat. He's like, he tells him to touch his bat. Touch my bat.
No, that was Danny Gaines.
It was Danny Gaines.
No, that was the Hoosiers guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And he goes, come on, man. I'm 0-16. You mean 0-16?
That's pretty good. You're right.
No one discussing baseball or any sport has ever said 0 and then the number that you say.
That's like my zip code. The zip codes in New Jersey start with the number 0. People always say, you don't say 0. Yeah,
exactly. Oh for 16. And then when they get in a fight on the bus, the Nathan Arizona comes and breaks it up. And he's like, oh, come on. And Newt goes, Crash was just telling me how to throw a breaking ball. A what?
You mean the just second pitch you learn?
Yeah.
Like, teaching you now how to throw a breaking ball.
A breaking ball is a catch-all term for any kind of pitch that breaks. That's not a specific type of pitch.
Ball.
And also, he's a professional pitcher. He could be saying, he's showing me a different grip on my slider, or, you know, he's helping me
tweak my four seamer, something very specific.
Yeah, he thinks I can throw a splitter if I just work on, like, it's like, sometimes there's just not any men around to correct these things.
And the weird thing is that not only did Shelton write it, who played baseball, but I'd read where they had a former major leaguer on as the
consultant,
consultant and shit. So I think there was like a second level of let's not make anything sound like bullshit. When I hear that 0-16, that always gives me a little, I don't know. It always kind of makes me cringe a little bit. It's because I know Danny Gans like probably read the script and he sees 0-16 and he thinks they wanted to say 0. They didn't write 0 on this guy. I think they wrote just 0-16, and somehow it got past the advisor, the script guy,
the fucking editor. Missed that day on the set.
Yeah, somehow
nobody. But
they're saying this like the details. Forgetting the details like that, I think that was the same bus trip where he's talking about how I hate people who get the words wrong in a song when he's singing Try a Little Tenderness. And he goes, young girls, they do get woolly, which is funny, but he's talking about paying attention to details. And then they fuck up that like a breaking ball is not something you teach a guy for the first time.
Yes. And again, not to nitpick, but Nuke's glove. It's a softball glove.
I don't think I noticed that.
Nuke has a softball glove.
Is it like a giant glove?
Yeah, it's like a big glove with a giant pocket with a huge with like the wrist has a Velcro closing on it. It's a goddamn softball glove. Also, he's a pitcher. Pitchers have smaller gloves. A ridiculous. How did they probably brought some gloves and they're like, okay, which one's going to be Nuke's? How does somebody not go, well, that doesn't look real. Like that's not the glove he should have.
Interesting choice. And if anyone was like really looking closely, like when Annie takes Nuke to the backyard after this trip to teach him how to pitch, she has a first base glove.
Yeah.
And I also find it's funny that, that he's pitching to Millie and he says something like, I don't want to hurt the girl's hands or whatever. He was railing her in the first scene of the movie.
Yeah.
So, in the backyard, you have Nuke, who has been inside two of the women.
Yes. He's already treated her like a catcher's mitt. He knows what she can take.
Oh, nice. Nice. That's a little, you know, Millie's just going to get down in a crouch and catch a guy with major league stuff. No big deal. Also, he's like 28 feet away from her as he's throwing. Like,
not a problem. Is like the equivalent of like 170 miles an hour for her.
Yeah. Also, you brought up the bus trip.
Yeah.
So they were playing, because this is I've driven in North Carolina a little bit. They were playing in Greensboro, and then they went home to Durham, but they drove like through the night. Like they show them driving,
right, and
then they get there and it's morning. I just mapped it. It's a 53-minute drive. They leave the game. It's dark. They're driving, and then they get back home, and you know they're home because all their like family is there to pick them up. So and it's light out,
right? Like they've been through an arduous journey of
53 minutes. Yeah.
So last summer when I did my road trip through the South, I went from Asheville to Durham was along the way, and that was a little bit of a longer drive than Greensboro.
Yeah, Asheville's like in the western part. West. That's in the hills, right?
Yeah. So maybe that, but that's still not an overnight trip. It's, you know, it's a couple hours.
Yeah, there's no overnight trips within the state of North Carolina. Like it's 53 minutes was that one.
And what I will say is that they very well, I don't know if they shot everything in Durham, but the stadium they have now, they didn't have a home game when I was passing through town, but I checked out the stadium and it's really nice. And they do have that bull, but it's in left field, not like the one where you hit it
right.
And you get a stake.
Oh, nice.
But it's like a super nice looking minor league stadium. Like it's got to be one of the best, but maybe after this movie, they just became so profitable.
Yeah. There's some of those where they're like big draws for the town. Like some of these minor league, cities literally are it's like a big deal. It's something to do that everybody, you know, pays attention to and goes to the games.
So on this road trip, again, this is one of my favorite movies of all time. So I hate pointing out the negatives, but like I think Shelton fell into the trap. On the road trip, they're losing games, and he fell into that trap that almost all baseball movies fall into. There's always the arc of a baseball team in a movie, and when they're not playing well, they do a movie collage of errors.
Yeah.
And he did the exact same thing. Newt giving up home runs or walking guys, balls falling between three fielders. I mean, these are just like cliches of bad baseball that you see in movies all the time. I never liked that. But the one thing that has like resonated throughout the years and is a lot of people's like favorite part of this movie is the rain delay or the rain out.
Oh, yeah.
We're gonna create a rain out with the sprinkler system. And then I will say this. Other than people having sex with food on them, which kind of happens later in the movie with milk and shit.
That's a problem.
Like guys in like full clothing diving in mud and getting wet. I'm not comfortable with that.
Jason,
you're not going to see me doing that.
I thought the exact same thing. I'm like, dude, your shoes. Like you're just going to run in your perfectly clean dress shoes and dive into mud. You're going to have to take those clothes and put them in your fucking duffel bag. It's not like you're going to do laundry and you're on the road. It's not like you're going to make laundry for yourself to do. It's like get the field wet, I guess, but then go to a bar and try to bang some locals.
Former Oriole and Dodger, Rick Dempsey was famous for rain delay diving around. Yeah. But you're in the majors and you have people taking care of your shit. When you're bussing it to places and in dress clothes, you're not doing that.
Yes.
And by the way, I liked Rick Dempsey. And obviously, like when I was in first grade or second grade, he was the World Series MVP.
Yes.
That being said, I never found that shit funny. Like,
no.
Just put on Twib notes. Just put on This Week in Baseball. I don't want to see you diving around.
We were talking earlier about how you got to be a unit to play the game. Back in the day, you would have a guy on the team that was just there, like, because he was funny. Jay Johnstone was like, he's hilarious. We got to trade for him. He was a shitty outfielder. Why was he Steve Lyons? Yes, Steve Psycho Lyons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rick Dempsey could have been the guy changing your oil.
He has a restaurant at the warehouse at Camden Yards.
Does he wear his hat backwards?
He makes a lot of appearances. There's Boog's barbecue and Dempsey's. Like those are the big things right in that warehouse area.
Dempsey caught the last out of the 1988 World Series.
Yep. Oh, yeah. We know that. Yep. Now, so they get back from this losing trip and everything, and that's when Annie's like, "Let me teach you how to pitch," and the eyelids and breathing through your eyes, and Fernando Valenzuela in the backyard.
Yep.
And then she gives him the I think the garter belt, and that becomes a thing. And he again.
So glad you brought this up.
But again, another great line by Nuke that probably wouldn't even be written into a script nowadays. When he's on the mound, he's like, "This feels kind of sexy." He's like, yeah. That don't make me queer or nothing.
Yeah, right. He's just wearing.
He's talking to himself. That doesn't make me queer or nothing.
Right? Yeah, there's a whole like garter belts make a lot of appearances in this movie
in the '80s.
Yeah,
but in the '80s. This was like quicksand and boat races. There was a lot of garter belts in the '80s.
Garter belts are only study get montages. Used. Yeah, only get used if it's the 1400s or the MILF in the porno has fat legs. Like, there's no one has ever worn garter belts. Like, it's such a weird, like, lingerie in general. It's kind of weird. Like, guys aren't into that. And in the '80s, they thought we were obsessed with it.
Yeah, yes. When she gives him the garters when they're like heading on the road trip, I was really digging his outfit. He had the dinner jacket with an Iron Maiden t-shirt underneath.
Yeah, he wears a lot of. He has an Iron Maiden shirt, a Motley Crue shirt. When he gets called up to the big leagues and he's doing his on-field interview and he's gotten a haircut, he's wearing a Fishbone shirt.
Fishbone, wow. Exactly right.
Yeah, like exactly just right. Yeah. There was he had a cool wardrobe for sure.
By the way, the shout out to Iron Maiden. They're going to be in town this fall. I think they're well into their 70s.
Yep.
And they're still fucking going at it. One of my favorite bands of all time.
Up the Iron Stew. I love Maiden.
They have a good beer that I've never seen in America, but it's called Trooper. And I get it over there. I have not seen it around here, but I like it.
There's a documentary about Iron Maiden. Where they fly everywhere, and Bruce Dickinson, the singer, pilots their plane.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's amazing.
Wow. Yeah. Great band.
Love Bruce Dickinson. Shout out. But yeah, so the garter thing and everything else, and so then they get on a winning streak, and then again, Nuke is given the great line. Man, I love winning. You know what I'm saying? It's better than losing. It's better than losing.
Yeah.
And then Crash starts giving them the list of cliches, which again, I don't know if it started with this movie, but I think it very much has resonated like over the years. A lot of these things that Crash gives Nuke to say are the same shit that you hear today from coaches and athletes.
Yeah. What are some of the cliches, Jason?
Well, I just want to give 100%.
Yeah.
I just want to, contribute to the team, God
play
willing.
Play the game the right games. Way.
Yeah,
play the game the right way. I loved it. Loved that scene.
Yeah, can't be looking at the schedule. The way,
in that montage, I think that road trip montage, they tried to crowbar Max Patkin again.
I know.
They gave him a quick scene. It's like, stop with this guy spitting out water. Get him out of here.
Yeah, no. Super weird. Super weird.
And I also don't know where it appears, but Skipper's best moment probably is when Crash is like, "You need to scare him." And he throws the bats into the shower and you lollygag, you lollygag. You lollygag. Yeah. He's so good in that scene.
That reminded me, and this has always bothered me. It's the communal shower. Are we in ancient Rome? Like, they do this in professional sports. Why do we have all the guys showering in just one big old fucking orgy room? Like, can we not have stalls? Is it that hard to make partitions around the shower head? Why must we all be naked playing Don't Drop the Soap together? Why does that exist?
It's super weird. It's weird. And I mean, high school, you always live somewhat close to your high school.
Shower at home.
And so it was like we had a shower, and I don't know if anyone in 4 years ever used those showers.
Never. The water polo guys would shower because they practiced in the morning, but they would just shower with their Speedos on and then go change. Right. Like, I'm not like a never nude. But also, like, it seems like aggressive to have everybody naked together, you know? It's kind of weird.
In context, because I think the thought pattern of the communal shower, not only just to save money on doors and shit, but everyone just assumed everyone was heterosexual until just about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So it was no problem at all. But I think that did factor into it. I think the communal showers now would put a little bit more thought into everyone's feelings and how uncomfortable they might be if you're homosexual and if you're gay, trying to take it, shower with other people.
And every once in a while you get one of those nude shower brawls. I remember Eric Karros tuned up Ishmael Valdez in the shower. Naked shower fight is like, that's a lot.
Oh, and Mike Damone and Ratner getting a fight right coming out of
in the locker room.
Right, he's wearing a towel. Damone's wearing almost nothing, like a loincloth.
And those guys aren't athletes; they're just in PE. They just did PE. They did gym, and they're showering to go to science.
My middle school gym teacher, Mr. Measley, used to make us shower and watched us. Yeah. And I think he was dealing with something, but I'm happy to report. I'm happy to report Mr. Measley is taking a dirt nap so he can go fuck himself.
Yeah, he's
hey, make sure you get it behind the ears, huh?
So eventually, Nuke gets called up. He's in his
they have to complete the arc and they go on a winning streak and Nuke abstains from having sex.
The old Mickey from Rocky thing, women weaken legs.
That's true.
As Annie had originally suggested, but then as they kept winning, she got more sexually frustrated. And so at some point on the bus, Nuke's like, I think I'm just going to cave in, have sex with Annie. She wants it. And Crash is like, no, you can't give in. Yeah. This is my question for you guys. Was Crash in the moment being an old school baseball guy and telling him you cannot do anything different to break a streak? You have to respect the streak. Or was he in the moment, you can't fuck her because – I want to fuck her.
He didn't want his piece of poon sullied. That's my piece of ass over there. And you're going to go in there and look, Nuke's like 6'3".
Yeah. He's working with more.
Yeah. He's probably dicked up. Like you don't want him going in there and ruining Annie Savoy like the Tokolosh. Like you want, she fucks a different player every year. And I like that she's real. She's an ethical slut. She's like, I'm just going to have like dirty sex, but only with one guy every season. what does she do in the off season? Does she just go dormant?
Yeah.
She gets worn out during the year. That's her rejuvenation.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. There
might be some Tar Heels or Blue Devils that she takes in.
Right.
The season. Oh, do you think maybe Danny Ferry got a shot in 1988 after. After that.
After Sam Perkins had just been
Sleepy Sam. Yeah.
But, the big smooth.
But I think that there's she gets frustrated sexually and Nuke admits to her that Crash told me I can't break the streak. I gotta respect it. So she goes to Crash's place to demand answers and they give Crash a couple really good lines in the next 10 minutes, but like she starts quoting William Blake to him as she's trying to admonish him. And I just love the way Koster acts the scene. He's like, William Blake? William, what the fuck are you even talking about?
Baseball players are dummies.
And then he's like, having a conversation with you is like a Martian talking to a fungo. I always love that line. And then that night, Nuke is pitching and he's anxious. And Costner goes to the mat. He's like, what the fuck's wrong with you? He's like, my dad's here. He's, they look over and he's waving at him. He's got a fucking 1988 camera, the family camera. And I love Crash's line when he's like, what did he say exactly? He said, he tells Nuke tells Crash his dad is here. And Crash says, He's just your old man. He's just as full of shit as anybody. Let's get going here. And that so that's when everybody goes to the mound. They start talking about their issues, you know, whether it be the
they need a wedding gift, an
animal to slaughter, and then fucking Wool runs up to the mound and he resolves it. But I just like Crash's line of, "We're dealing with a lot of shit." Like that to me, it was like it has been said over and over in my private life many times by me and friends. We're dealing with a lot of shit here. And it all goes back to that fucking line. I love it.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to go through life is to remember that everyone is full of shit. Like nobody is that important, whether it's your boss or everyone's full of shit. Nobody's important.
Everybody's thinking about themselves too. People are worried about what people are thinking about them. Nobody's thinking about you. They're thinking about themselves. Just like you're thinking about yourself.
I was not a great technical bond salesman, but the thing I did best was let people talk about the subject they like the most.
Yeah.
Themselves. Of course. That's how you sell things. You tell people about themselves.
Yes.
The genius of sales. So Newt gets through this game that his dad is there for. They go back to Annie. And I think that, by the way, if you want to look at this scene again, Sarandon, I think, wins the nomination for whatever she was nominated for that year. Her just kind of there not wanting Nuke to show up because she wants Costner to show up, and just the way she kind of acts nonverbal in that moment. She puts on some Italian opera. Which makes that fucking line that Nuke delivered even better. Nuke's pounding on the door with his dad. And he's like, "I know you're in there, Annie. I hear that crazy Mexican music."
That Spanish guy.
Yeah, no, it's Edith Piaf, the French singer.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I hear that crazy Mexican music.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. He gets called up, right? And then Crash Davis, who's a 39-year-old journeyman catcher, who we've been told was only there to make Nuke Lelouch good. He gets cut, and everybody's surprised.
Right, that was his role. That was it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He did exactly what he was supposed to do, and I don't know why he was surprised that he got released. Eventually, he gets to slay it, though. Right, he's shows up. Yeah. He goes to Susan Sarandon's house,
we want this payoff.
Yeah,
but doesn't have to go down like this.
Yeah. They're fucking on the floor.
Milk is being spilled everywhere.
They're fucking on the butcher block in the kitchen. Does this woman have no beds?
It basically turns into one of his tenets in life. He believes in softcore porn. So I'm going to make that 15 minutes in the final act of this movie softcore porn. This entertaining movie with great lines and kind of a comedy, but really cool. And then it just turns into softcore porn for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And I'm all about that. That's fine with me, but it was a weird departure from the rest of the movie.
It is.
Yeah. It was a lot of wisecracking and then it goes right to the porn.
And there was a 10-minute sax solo while they're making love three different ways.
That's the most 80s part of all.
The song that was playing while they're fucking, 60 Minute Man.
Oh.
Too long. Guys, your lady does not want to be pounded for an hour.
Yeah, I don't have that club in my bag, so there's no problem.
Shoot for like a 15, 20-minute sesh. Get in there. Get her to make the noises that let you know that she got what she needed out of it, and then get the fuck out. She doesn't want to be counting ceiling tiles. Like 60 minutes, way too long. That's way too long of a session. Crash fucks her and chucks her, though. He bangs her. This is always weird.
Right?
Yeah, this is always weird. This reminds me of something. It's always weird when people bounce in the morning. Like if I'm sleeping in bed with somebody and they get up out of bed, I'm almost always aware of it.
Yes.
He leaves her a note. Thanks for the pussy. He bounces to Asheville, which again, should we map it? He's like, this is such an 80s thing.
Yeah.
He writes in the note. He's like
he's moving to Guam.
Yeah. I heard Asheville's looking for a catcher. Asheville.
Oh, by the way,
Yes.
If you have a chance, Asheville's a great town. There's like a bunch of breweries. It's very cool. Yeah. Artsy, good restaurants. I'm a big fan.
To Durham. This is a lot like Jason Stewart and I do a Bachelor show.
Yeah.
On Bachelor in Paradise, the host comes on at the end of the season. He's like, "All right, you either got to get engaged or break up." And I'm like, "What? Can't they like text each other after once they leave Tulum, they're not allowed to communicate anymore?" He's trying to sign on in Asheville, which is a little over a 3-hour drive from Durham. It's in the same state. It's not even really doing long distance. Like you could come out when they got home stands. You could cultivate a relationship from 3 hours distance, right?
So last summer I made that exact drive and we had breakfast in Asheville and lunch in Durham.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not the end of the world. You don't have to break up because he's playing 3 hours away.
Was this intentionally a Bo Durham trip? Or did you just happen to go to North Carolina and hit all these spots?
No, we flew to New Orleans and then drove home and like stopped in Nashville. We went to Dollywood. We went to Asheville. It was cool because we couldn't fly anywhere, the kids and stuff. And it was like, all right, we'll do a kind of, we flew to New Orleans, but we didn't get our shit together and Europe had like regulations still. So we did a US road trip.
That sounds nice.
It was fun.
But Crash realizes that the pussy was just too good. He's like, I can't.
Yeah.
He's like, fuck it. I'm done.
Oh, I'm looking at the scene, by the way, the fucking on the butcher's block.
Yeah.
There's a stick of butter like disgusting. Under their knees. Disgusting. It's super gross.
Look, somebody's butt is on that. And that's like, that's where you're going to be like cutting the tri-tip the next day.
Milk and butter.
I want to know the cleaning cost and the property damage from this one lovemaking session, because the water that comes out of the tub that had to cause damage.
Yes.
Floor damage.
That's right.
Absolutely. And look,
floorboards are buckling.
When you're treating your lady to a sesh, you want her to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. You're putting her back on a hard
butcher's block.
Piece of wood. Like, go to the bed or at least the couch. Get her on something soft. He comes back and then he's like, I heard they're looking for a manager in Visalia, which is a real shithole, I believe, near Bakersfield.
Yep.
I would not really, maybe check your other options. And he's like, do you think I could make it to the bigs as a manager? And the answer is yes, because that's the easiest job in the world. Anybody could do it. Like, Joe Torre is considered one of the best ever, and Joe Torre's a moron. He just had good players. As long as you have good players, you can be a successful manager. That's all it takes.
Yeah, it's weird how Joe Torre had that, like, great technique of having the highest payroll in baseball.
Yes, yes.
It was a good technique.
Always helps. Always helps. Anything else? The movie ends with a Walt Whitman quote about baseball. It's a sweet movie, right? It's a love letter to baseball, a sport. It's the national pastime. It's a sport we love.
Yes.
It's summer. It's we all love baseball, and that's why we love Bull Durham.
I think that's why it's always been my favorite, because like
it's a fun not movie.
In the eccentric ways that she had it, but like, in a lot of ways, I've always seen baseball the way she has it. Like there's something a little bit more at play than just a competition or a sport. Like there are just certain levels of baseball that are nuanced and a little bit more than what it appears. But there's one thing that she says that I think is a great line. She was talking about how Nuke is going to be fine, and she stopped worrying about Nuke, and she says, the world is made for people who are not cursed with self-awareness.
Yeah.
I love that line. Just love it. Yeah. I think it's so perfect. Most people, and we found out, especially with COVID and everything, most people are just fucking just lemmings and going through life and the players in life and participating. And if you're not cursed with self-awareness, then it's a much easier fucking trip. And that's exactly what it was for Nuke. This is life is going to be a lot easier because of that ignorance And for people like Crash and Annie, you know, it's a little bit more challenging. And I just thought that line was great.
It's a great line.
To sum up the movie.
It is a good line.
Some casting choices that could have been different. The studio wanted Anthony Michael Hall as Nuke.
Thank God. Thank God that didn't happen. Well, I don't even, I think
I like I
think,
him, but Robbins was, even though like everyone talks about how bad his pitching is,
yeah.
Like he is such a good meathead in this.
No, amazing. He is good. And he got Susan Sarandon from this movie, right?
Like he got her.
This is how he met.
How old was he?
Oh, he had to be in his late 20s.
She was 41.
I read that Costner was only like 3 years older than Robbins in real life.
Oh, really? Let's see.
Yeah, I'd read that.
He's 63. He's born 58. Oh, this was 88. He was 40 or almost 40.
30.
Oh, wait, 30. Yeah. Wow. Hey, shut up. Every time we do math on this show, I fuck it up, and it's all people want to tell me. They're like, oh, hey, nice job, 40. 88 minus 58 is 40. Like, you can't even do fucking math. And I'm like, yeah, I never said I could.
You got the gazintos wrong.
Yes, exactly. 30. And Costner was probably like, what, 37? Let's see.
They're saying Jason said 3 years.
Well, let's see.
Yeah.
But Jason, you got to take that with a grain of salt if he said it. Kevin Costner. Oh, Jason's right, 55. So, yeah, 3 years. So he would have been 33.
I mean, in the movie, they're supposed to be like a decade at least apart.
Yeah.
But, he's 12 years in.
Yeah. Kurt Russell worked with Ron Shelton to develop the script and was originally thought of to play the part of Crash Davis.
I as great as Costner is, I mean, that's the one guy I think who could have nailed it too.
Yes. Kurt Russell agreed. He said after the movie was made, he wrote a fan letter to Costner telling him how good he was and how good the movie was.
So Kurt Russell agreed to do the part. And then in the meantime, when Kurt Russell went to do another movie or something, Costner had met with Shelton and they hit it off so well. And Costner took Shelton to the batting cage and Costner, I guess, showed him that he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson and Harrison Ford were also considered for Crash.
Mel Gibson would have been horrendous.
Yeah. There's no way either of those guys can hold a bat. You know what I was watching last night? A Few Good Men. And Tom Cruise, there's a scene where he's hitting infield his softball team. And I'm like, buddy, that's, you know how just, you
the only
just
thing he can do in movies is run. Like that's the only thing they give him to do. But
he flies the plane. Like he can learn to do shit. He flies planes. He rides motorcycles. Gets into it. But
there's no way he played like baseball.
Yeah. If you don't have the muscle memory and if you just don't know the motion, it just looks fucking weird. And you can tell.
I think it's the one sport that you just can't fool. You can't fool other people that play the sport or people that know the sport. That's the one sport that you just can't. You can't walk up on the set and then just try to do things. And whenever I see Cruise do that thing in that movie or other actors try to do it, I always think that as a child, they were going from one audition to the other. They weren't playing sports. There's so many of these actors are not athletic. I just see Tom Cruise as one of. And by the way, I forgot to make this point. Costner swings the bat pretty damn well from both sides of the plate.
He does.
That's asking an actor to do a lot.
Yeah, he's a definite athlete.
He looks
like a golfer. He looks like a baseball player. Like he's
no doubt
an athlete.
But juxtaposed against another one of the movies that he's known for, and you know. R.I.P. the late Ray Liotta fucking bats right-handed because he couldn't bat left-handed. Fucking Costner shows up on this movie batting fucking both ways and he looked pretty good.
Didn't they haven't what was that movie? What was that HBO movie?
What 61?
61.
Yeah.
Oh, Hung.
Oh yes.
Guy with the big unit.
Yeah, he played Mickey Mantle.
He's from Boogie Nights.
Yeah, and
Tom J. Jay or something.
Tom Jane, and they had to.
Barry Pepper looked like a theater kid,
right? Yeah, but they flip the film or something. If a guy can't bat left-handed, they turn the film around so it makes it look like he's hitting left-handed.
Right-handed.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
They had to wear backwards letters on their uniforms. I remember seeing something about that.
No shit.
Yeah.
So I wonder why they wouldn't.
But by the way, I could play baseball. I was not like a great baseball player. No. But I would have to have the film reverse. I don't think I'd be believable swinging from the left.
Oh no! If I try to swing left-handed, I'd look like Tom Cruise trying to hit him.
When film. I like, throw lefty, I throw like the worst. You know, like quote in quotes, like a girl. Like that's how I throw lefty. I can't do it.
Correct. So they should have done that reverse photography if that was a thing for Field of Dreams, or just cast somebody different. Like. Yes. The shoeless Joe batting right-handed to me is just such a violation of any baseball fans' knowledge.
For a big baseball fan, I'm going to say something that might hurt you. I didn't like Field of Dreams. I thought that's a C-minus movie at best.
It's a horrible movie.
It's got a lot of flaws.
You want to have a catch with your dad or whatever. I don't give a shit about that movie.
It's so cheesy. It's awful. Here's an interesting one. In the scene where the Bulls have returned from a long road trip, 53 minutes, we learned, Annie is seen at the game wearing a black veil and appearing as if she had just come from a funeral. This is because the previous scene where Annie attends Max Patkin's funeral was deleted
cut out of the movie?
Post-production. Ron Shelton had written a scene where Max was killed in a car crash during the season. Jeez.
But what would be the point of that?
Yeah, that wouldn't have anything to do with the fucking movie or the characters.
Also, he's playing himself. So it's like, you're not a character that dies. You're you that dies.
If that's the case, I appreciate that Ron Shelton tried to kill off that character.
Yes. The big club is referenced several times during the movie, though it is never made completely clear what major league team the Bulls are affiliated with. At the time of the filming, the Durham Bulls were a Carolina League single A affiliate of the Atlanta Braves. Ooh. As of 2013, the Durham Bulls are the triple A affiliate of the Tampa Rays.
There you go.
Yep. Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon met on this movie. Ranked number 5 on American Film Institute's list of the 10 greatest films in the genre sports.
Oh yeah, easy.
Yeah.
It's number 5. I mean, I would assume they have longest yard. Like what?
Yeah.
But those AFI lists, they'll be like, "Oh, Bang the Drum Slowly is the best movie." Like they always have some really
Bridge Over River Kwai.
Movie.
Yeah.
I remember the AFI Top 100. There were like 2 movies in the last 50 years. Everything else was like super old.
Both Jeff Bridges and Don Johnson turned down the role of Crash. Well, Don Johnson's there's no way to throw a baseball. Yeah. Here's something. So at the end of the movie, I just kind of let it play and it said the producers wish to thank, and there was a whole long list of people. And the first name on the list, Paula Abdul.
Did you hear the story about that?
I just read this. She choreographed his dance. He was a pretty good dancer. Like you could see why chicks wanted to fuck him. Nuke was out there on the dance floor cutting a rug.
He was vibing. He was vibing in that first bar scene.
Yeah, for sure.
The scene, she screamed and like yelled on set because she thought she was going to get a couple lines for that.
Yes. Yeah. She didn't get those. Yeah. What are you going
to
do?
You get to act with DJ Scat Cat or MC Scat Cat, whatever. But not with Bull Durham. Get out of here.
Let's see. The studio thought that Susan Sarandon was too old and not funny enough to play Annie. So she sucked one of their dicks. So producer Tom Mount had Sarandon, who was 41 during production, go to Orion Pictures co-founder Mike Medavoy's office in a tight dress and lean over his desk for half an hour.
Elaine did that on Seinfeld. Yes,
this is crazy.
But at the same time, like that's kind of what works with guys for the end of time.
As a rule, most studio executives' strong suit isn't imagination, Sarandon recalled to Sports Illustrated. So when you're trying to get a part, it helps for them to be able to envision you in the part. I definitely didn't go in there in a t-shirt and jeans. I remember I had on an off-the-shoulder red and white striped dress. It was very form-fitting. It was understood what I had to do. Wow.
She, there's nobody else that could have played that role. Yeah. She was amazing. I mean, it was a great written part, but she played it well. So check this out. I found, I don't even know what this is dated, but ESPN went around to their columnists and editors, and they asked for the top sports movies. So Longest Yard, number 10, The Hustler, number 9, Caddyshack, Field of Dreams is 7, The Natural is 6, Slapshot's 5, Hoosiers is 4. The top 3 at 3 is Raging Bull, which tops most people's lists.
Yeah.
Rocky at number 2, which was 2.5 hours.
Pretty long. Pretty slow.
A lot of drama. Yeah. And not a lot of sports.
A lot of Adrian.
Bull Durham. Bull Durham's the best movie according to ESPN internal.
There are some good ones on there, though. Yeah. Slapshot, I forgot. That's an amazing movie.
Oh, it's so good. I haven't seen it in a long time. I love that movie. Melanie Griffith was also considered. Deborah Winger and Carrie Fisher both turned it down.
Fuck Deborah Winger.
Nick Nolte turned down the role of Crash Davis. David Duchovny was considered for Nukalush. Be a very different movie with any of those people. Kelly McGillis was interested to play the role of Annie, but turned it down.
Instead,
she starred in The Accused.
Wow.
Very different movie.
Interesting. That's a very different movie.
Yes.
I noticed McGillis wasn't even invited to Maverick. Like the ship had sailed.
Why would she?
Yeah.
Cybill Shepherd and Bruce Willis were considered to play the parts of Annie and Crash, but declined due to their commitment to the TV series Moonlighting. There's no way Bruce Willis can swing a bat. Nah. Zero chance.
He would definitely crowbar some harmonica scenes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The movie. Yeah. He'd have his sleeves rolled up.
Seagrams. Yeah. Yes. Golden wine. Cool. Yes.
As is the case in many baseball films, the actors are using bats that are models used by actual major leaguers. The character Bobby uses a George Brett, and Jose uses a Chet Lemon. Wow. Oh, here we go.
Chet Lemon. Wow. Tigers.
Danny Gans, who had a small role as a third baseman, went on to great fame as a Las Vegas entertainer known as the Man of Many Voices. He had a long-running show at the Mirage Hotel, and it was voted top show in Las Vegas for 10 consecutive years. From 98 to 08, they even named the theater after him. He died, as did Travis Rogers' employment with the Jim Rome Show, on May 1st, 2009.
What?
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Okay, let's wrap it up there. Oh, wait, hold on. Jeez, I forget this every time.
Who's that loud cover? Coming all over.
So, at one point, Annie and Nuke have sex with the sheets over their... They're completely covered by the covers of the bed.
That's very suffocating.
Yep. Oh, my God. It's so claustrophobic. You can barely breathe. But Susan Sarandon, I would say she's a moderately loud comer.
Yeah.
Not a super loud comer.
I know the loud comer here. I know
it. Oh, well, Daly, who is the loud comer in this movie? Who do you think is the loudest comer in the movie Bull Durham?
I have a feeling that his hemorrhage was caused by loud coming. I think the manager is
Trey Wilson. Nathan Arizona.
Nathan Arizona seems like he'd be a super loud comer.
And he was looked like he was much older than he actually was. And maybe that was from his expressive coming throughout his life.
He was expelling.
Yes. Jason Stewart, who was the loud comer?
I think Max.
Max Patkin.
Yeah, Max Patkin.
He was
looking at that grill. There's no way he had sex for like 5 decades.
Dude was shooting dust. I got to go with decades long entertainer of the year in Las Vegas, Danny Gans. He's definitely a loud comer.
He's styling.
He does it as Sammy Davis Jr. Oh, I'm called. How about me, Daddy? Like he'll do it in voices. He comes, he'll come as Sinatra. The next time he comes as Joan Rivers. And you're like, oh my God, this is so funny.
I can see that.
He's absolutely the loudest comer. Maybe not even the loudest comer in history, or more likely the loudest comer in history.
Right. I could see him going like, can we talk?
Yes,
in Henderson, Nevada.
Can we talk? I'm ejaculating right now. Look at me over here. Okay, guys. Outstanding work as always. Jason Stewart, we got The Bachelor starting up here pretty soon.
Oh, yeah.
I know. It's really stresses me out. I hate it so much. But we do a great show about it if you're not already following.
I might have to make a stunt appearance.
Yeah, you can come on anytime.
Jump in.
Yeah.
The Bachelor Lifestyle. You'll
have to explain to me what's happening, but I'd like to join.
Jay Stu has to explain to me, and sometimes he'll go, and then there was this very important turning point, and this one girl cried, and I'll be like, seriously?
I just like looking at their bios where they say their favorite movie is like, you know, like fucking
Lion King.
Really stupid.
Yeah. It's always something. It's always something animated. And they have cool jobs like waxer and like spray tanner.
No job that would let you off for 2 months.
No, exactly. No. Yeah. They're trying to be influencers. For Ed Daly, who's here with me every week, for Jason Stewart. My name is Brian Beckner. This has been episode number 429 of the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. We'll see you next week.
TBLS, hell yes, the lifestyle's baller. Podcast getting bigger and not smaller. Broadcasting weekly, that's what we do. With Easy Ed Daly and a man, Jay Stew, and Brian Beckner, quick to dissect the week in sports and culture and whatever. Chosen to others, top podcast, man, no one is above us. 5-star, even the haters will love us. And we're not trying to talk politics a lot. We'd much rather talk about dicks a lot. Shit's so hot, man, you know the shit's on top. Top podcast, man, it really hits the spot. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. And you know the show is so flawless. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. And you know the show is for all us. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller.